or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Lynn Henderson directs the Shyness Institute and Clinic at Stanford University and is one of America's leading experts on how to cope with being shy and or socially anxious, including in the workplace. So, Lynn Henderson, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Nice to be here.
Good. You know, off the air, we were talking a little bit about causality, and you were describing some very interesting studies in which there are incipient signs of shyness that emerge even in infancy, suggesting that there is at least a genetic component to shyness. Tell us about that.
Well, let me just correct the intro a little bit, though. I'm director of the Shyness Institute, which is our research and public education institute, and I am past director of the Shyness Clinic at Stanford. There is a new director now, and it's at Pacific Graduate School of Psychology.
Okay.
Los Altos.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, for sure. I think what they are saying is that for 15 to 20% of infants, they might be slightly more biologically reactive to novelty. But it's very difficult. You can't predict whether somebody's going to become shy or not. That seems to have an awful lot to do with environment. So right now they're talking about, you know, there's an interaction, maybe a little biological vulnerability, but biology is by no means destiny.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. We all know that most things of who we are biological predispositions with an environmental trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on work, because this show does focus on career and work.
Yes.
So describe an obvious or less obvious way or two that shyness tends to manifest itself in the workplace.
Well, if somebody has a problem with shyness, sometimes they just don't participate in ways that they want to. They may not speak up in meetings. Mm-hmm. They may sort of avoid the little informal interactions that go on at work where so much information, important information, gets exchanged.
And relationships get built, which is unfortunately so often how people get promoted. If they like you, you get hired. And if you're too shy to do that, you could be more competent and then not get that promotion because of that.
Yeah, because sometimes you don't let your manager know about your successes, and sometimes people don't ask for help when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of it is they just are not as visible. But I think it's kind of important to note that the positive ways that shyness shows up in the workplace, mm-hmm, is they tend to be thoughtful and reflective. They may check things out before jumping in. They tend to be sensitive to the thoughts and feelings of others. They tend to be good listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So often we focus on the vulnerabilities of shyness, and that's really important when you're struggling with shyness, but people overlook their strengths as well.
You know, that's exactly, I did a show about, I'd say 6 months ago, about introverts in the workplace.
Yeah.
And that seemed, what you just said was a 100% overlap with what the guest said about introverted people. What's the difference between shyness and introversion, or are we splitting hairs?
No, that's a good question. They're correlated, but they're not the same. But probably shy people tend to be introverted more than they tend to be extroverted, but there are many extroverts who are shy. The shyness component tends to be this, maybe there's a concern about negative evaluation, a concern about being criticized, that I think sometimes goes along with this kind of gift of sensitivity. They tend to be pretty aware of other people and how they're thinking of feeling. And of course, if you've been criticized or you've had negative experiences, then you're sensitized in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
So shyness that's a problem usually has that component to it. They're really concerned about being judged and criticized, and that's why they don't participate as much.
I'm going to make just a hypothesis here.
Sure.
That both of those things, shyness and introversion, are in part actually a sign of intelligence. And an intelligence with a capital I, meaning if you're really aware of all the negative potential implications of what you say, you know, how it could turn somebody off, or that you really don't know as much as you think you do,
right,
and, you know, that you're smart enough to know what you don't know, you're going to be far more reticent about speaking up. It is the people who are too stupid to know they're stupid who are willing to sally forth and just speak. Is there some legitimacy to that?
Well, you know, maybe some. There's no evidence right now that there's any difference in intelligence between people who are shy and not shy.
Hmm.
But I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. I did an article for the Duke Gifted Newsletter,
mm-hmm,
And I did a literature survey on giftedness. And, of course, one of the things that does happen with gifted kids, apparently, is that they do tend to be sometimes earlier in life and more sensitive to the thoughts and feelings of people around them. It goes along with being intelligent.
Well, I can say certainly I was considered, you know, I have to say this, I had 160 IQ or something as a kid, and yet I was utterly insensitive. I grew up in a family that told me, you know, to be proud of your intelligence, and I was like, I was show off, whether it be playing the piano or my reading skills or whatever, and I was utterly oblivious to the social impact of what I did, and I was beaten up and hated, and my reaction was merely simply to become an isolate. I read by myself, I played basketball by myself, I went bowling by myself. There's this book called Bowling Alone that was about racial issues, and yet I was literally one of those people who went bowling alone. So I don't know if there's a pure there's no pure correlation with anything, I guess. Intelligence
and shyness. That's really interesting, because that's often how it will happen. That's one of the reasons that I call the training we do at the Shyness Clinic social fitness training, mm-hmm. is because we all have a temperament to manage, and we have strengths and vulnerabilities. And it's usually our experiences that will throw us one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly kind of natural what happened with you. You grow up in a particular way, you're not thinking about it, and then you get slammed. Mm-hmm. But you don't know what you're being slammed about to begin with.
Exactly.
Half the time. So that's exactly the kind of thing that makes people tend to be more shy or more inhibited. Mm-hmm. Because often the feedback we get from the environment doesn't come in positive ways where we can use it.
The best thing that could have ever been done to help me be a happier person as mm-hmm. a child, if somebody had walked around with me for one school day and watched
right.
the way in which I interacted with kids mm-hmm. and gave me feedback in the moment, here's where you're being obnoxious, showing off is bad. You know, if I got that moment-to-moment in-situ feedback,
exactly.
that could have transformed me, and then
yeah.
I never got it. Yeah.
Yep. And I think that's the strength of working with this stuff in a group setting. Yep. You can do it individually, too. I think lots of people have real success with individual coaching, but it's one of the reasons I love to work in groups mm-hmm. is because there's minute-to-minute feedback.
Yep.
And it's usually done in a really supportive environment where we're all dealing with our difficulties and strengths and vulnerabilities and what we're working on. So it's all done in a kind of a constructive framework.
I could see that. I could see that, but I would think there's an enormous difference between the way in which somebody functions in a group in a supportive setting in a clinic mm-hmm. and the way in which they function in the pressures of the workplace. I really think the most valuable, for what it's worth, and you can push mm-hmm. back on me, you're the shyness expert.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most valuable sort of input that could occur is if you, for example, or somebody else who is very socially adept would spend an hour or two in that person's workplace, watching them in a meeting, watching them at their desk, watching them in the break room. I think there's going to be a very, very big difference between how they function and the quality of the feedback you're going to be able to give if you did that versus if they were sitting in your clinic. You buy that?
I would certainly buy part of it. I don't think there's anything that probably works better than being able to see somebody in the environment they're in. I do think that a group setting raises enough anxiety, particularly to begin with. And if you've got people from outside role-playing with people, I think they can get a lot of positive transfer.
Makes good sense. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Lynn Henderson. She directs the Shyness Institute at Stanford University, and formerly she directed the clinic at Stanford. Myths. Is there any myth that is widely held about being shy?
Yeah, I think the most widely held myth is that it's necessarily a problem.
Right, that's what you said earlier.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any other myth?
I think it's kind of important, the idea that 60% of college students report being shy and a third of them don't see it as a problem. One other interesting thing is you can only identify it about 15% of the time. The other thing is...
If you can't identify it, is it real? I mean, then isn't that not, you know, therapist-created pathology?
Well,
you can't even identify it?
That's a very good question, because that leads me to my next point.
Okay.
The fact that shy people need meds. There's a great book about how shyness became a sickness by a guy named Christopher Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, because it became social anxiety disorder.
Right, exactly.
And it's a normal personality trait, like any other, where you have to work on some things and you don't need to work on others.
And there's a normal distribution of every single factor about who we are. And if every time somebody is one standard deviation below the mean on something, we're going to be medicated up the yin-yang. I mean, is it not correct that unless we're really at three standard deviations below the mean in terms of social anxiety or intelligence or depression or whatever, or abruptness, as in my case, where I probably am pretty close to three standard deviations below the mean, that basically we shouldn't pathologize it and say, if we're really celebrating diversity, let's celebrate real, not just melanin diversity, but let's celebrate temperamental diversity.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's hugely important. And, of course, the drug companies were making money on it. The other bad news about meds is that they stop, as soon as you stop taking them, they stop helping. And the other thing is they don't add that much beyond what you can learn through what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of a learning model where you practice what you're scared of, and you rehearse and you role play and you change some of your thinking patterns, just as with coaching. Taking meds doesn't add that much.
The problem is, Lynn, I talk to so many people, and you're going to hear some people, for example, especially when we're talking about, for example, ADD medications. Mm-hmm. You have some people who cite good studies that say that 80% of people make immediate and dramatic transformations in their ability to focus and be socially acceptable, etc. Then you have some people who say, no, I myself would have hated to be on ADHD medication, even though clearly I am ADHD and always been. and depression is a different story, because we know that depression meds will make moderate difference, especially with cognitive therapy as an adjunct, in about half the people. But half people, it doesn't make them better. And in some cases, in many cases, it make them so emotionally flat that any benefit that derives is outweighed by the excision of their personality. Do you buy that analysis?
Well, part of it. I mean, I do think that that's an issue. And now they're finding that being on meds for long periods of time seems to be no more helpful than not being on them.
Wow, that's very interesting.
So if you do it, if people take meds and they take them for short periods of time to get them through critical periods, that is one thing. But lots of times, people are on medication for long periods of time and they may be functioning a little worse than people who didn't take it.
Interesting point. And especially when normally if you're trying to take something for a crisis, certainly with antidepressant medication, they tell you it takes about 6 weeks for it to kick in.
Right.
So by the time it kicks in, your crisis is over or whatever. So,
well, or if you take it for about 6 months, it's probably fairly well resolved by that time. And often I think people kind of naturally stop taking medication when they stop feeling like they need it, too.
Exactly. Okay, let's talk about what works and what doesn't work that's commonly tried. Let's say I am an actual shy person who demonstrates in the workplace, all those things you describe. I tend to avoid meetings. I tend to hide. I don't ask questions, all that stuff. I don't hang around the water cooler. I don't build the networking relationships. So I'm your client. What do you tell me to do?
Well, the first thing for everybody to remember is, like, the big thing is to communicate warmth, however you do it, and approach people, whether you're scared or not, even if it's just to say hello or to talk about what it's like outside. Also looking for...
How do you demonstrate warmth? I mean, other than saying hello and the weather, it's sunny outside.
Smiling. Asking somebody a question, actually trying to be genuinely interested in what they say.
Great.
Look for things you find interesting about them. People like to be liked.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's really important to talk to somebody every day. I don't care if it's the mailman. I don't care who it is.
I like it.
But that's what social fitness training is. Just like physical fitness, you can't work out once a month and be in shape physically, and you can't do workout once a month socially and be in shape either.
I like it because it's simple. There's no negative side effects. It's something that feels, in my judgment, I could see people actually doing that in the real world. Love it. What's another strategy you'd recommend?
Practice doing what you're scared of. Rehearse talks and things you want to say in meetings in front of a mirror. Do it with a friend or a family member.
Love it.
Role play with people you trust. Focus on your strengths and continually ask for feedback.
Love it.
The other thing that's really important is listening to what you really want and pursuing goals you really care about, rather than the ones you think you should care about or trying to become an extrovert. Accepting that shyness is a normal human emotion, a blend of fear and interest, and not something to be gotten rid of. Recognizing that everybody feels shy from time to time. Do you know only slightly over 1% of college students say they've never been shy? And to go along with that, notice sometimes when you feel shy, you don't notice that the other person might be feeling shy. And so
good.
it's a great icebreaker. Say to a new date, I'm feeling a little shy, and
good.
See what she does. That
Love
used to be one of that used to be one of the great homework exercises at the clinic, because none of the guys would believe us. They thought that if you said that to a woman, they'd be turned off. Generally, they're not. The
right.
woman will say, well, actually, I'm feeling a little bit shy, too.
Fantastic.
And also, counter the negative stereotypes of shyness in your own head. I mean, this whole business that there are larger-than-life people and hyper-individualism and you got to be dominant to succeed is a bunch of...
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
Yes. And so the thing that's important is that you communicate warmth, you develop your own competencies, you listen to other people, and you listen to what people want, you pursue your own goals, and maybe you join volunteer groups, things that you really care about. When we care about stuff, I think we're the most attractive.
I
think that applies to human beings in general. One more thing, don't avoid being leaders, because there are many, many incredibly influential leaders in history who were shy. Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Edison, Einstein, Gandhi, Eleanor Roosevelt, Mandela, Queen Elizabeth, I mean, Harrison Ford, David Beckham. I mean, we have so many examples of shy leaders in history, but given the negative stereotyping of shyness in our culture right now, I don't want kids to avoid leadership roles who are shy. They've got tremendous strengths, to me, for the information age. In a global economy, what do we need? We need collaboration. These people are capable of being really, really good collaborators.
Okay. Dear listeners, the last 2 minutes of what Lynn just did is goldmine. You know, we're very fortunate that we live in an era in which all radio shows, at least in this radio show, is recorded permanently for free. You can go to the NPR website for the next 1 week, and you can download what she just did, a brain dump of what is probably 30 years of expertise, of practical and wisdom here that is worth your going after. Or on my website, I archive these shows in perpetuity. When I get home tonight, it won't be for about 8 hours because I'm out today, but you can go to my website, martynemko.com, martynemko.com, and you will be able to listen to it forever. It's we're about minute 18. I've never done this before. If you listen to my show, you know I've never said this before. We're at about minute 18. So between minute 15 and minute 18 of this show, if you are shy or someone you love is shy, I would encourage you to take notes. Take notes, print it out, keep the printout at your desk or on your mirror or whatever, and I think you will find more curative properties in that piece of paper than in maybe all the therapy in the world. But if that doesn't work, you can go see some cognitive behavioral therapy, but start with that. I want to add one other thing before I ask you my next question, Lynn, and that's this. I want to underscore something that Lynn said. I think we are in an era. This is a female-dominated ethos in the year 2010, in which collaboration and gentler ways of being are primary and are given far more credibility, right or wrong, let's put aside the issue of right or wrong, are given far more credibility than the more male, aggressive, testosterone-driven, some would say testosterone-poisoned ways of being in the world. So if you or someone you love is shy, you are actually, in my judgment, at an advantage in becoming a leader in success in general. So embrace your inner shyness is my message. You want to add to that or say something?
Oh, I think that's terrific. I want to hire you.
Anyway, sometimes in reality, I'm not actually shy at all. I don't have a shy bone in my body. While despite all the, the rejection as a child, it's almost sociopathic.
Well, you do what you care about is what I hear. You do what you love, you do what you care about, and you care about a lot of stuff.
That's what it is. You see, it's not that. If somebody told me I had to run a chain of shoe shine stores, I'd be equally passionate in making it the best shoe shine shop in the world.
Well, that's a real strength.
It's just who I am. It's just I'm driven. I've been driven from... I came out of the womb with three... multitasking. I came out of the womb with an iPhone next to my ear. In any case... Okay, let's turn to another question. Let's turn to what employers could do. If, let's say, I'm a sensitive new male type employer, And I want to be very sensitive to the needs of shy people, recognizing that they offer tremendous amount to my workforce. What kind of reasonable accommodations should I be making for shy folks?
Good question. Provide different ways for people to communicate. Invite people to speak who haven't said much in a meeting. Make it routine. Invite your quieter speakers.
Love
because
it.
They may not volunteer. Ask people in meetings to take notes and email the notes to the group after the meeting. Lots of people are really good communicators in writing who don't like to talk as much, whether they're shy or not.
Right.
This is a gold mine for the brain trust. Give people time to speak. Introverts take longer to put their thoughts together. If people are jumping in on top of them, go back to the person or tell the verbal person to hold on a minute. Put people together in small groups with different areas of expertise that everyone needs to learn, so that the only way they can come up to speed on a project or a topic is by listening to each other. That way people learn listening skills, and that gets rewarded rather than being the most dominant or the most talkative. Transform the context. Reframe the terms of the debate. Minimize win-lose situations. Reward and acknowledge listening behavior. Provide an accepting environment, which
okay,
is not...
You sound like you've done a lot of preparation for the show, so you're kind of ticking off a lot. Let's go back. Say the last thing a little more slowly. Expand on it a bit so the audience can digest it better.
Okay. The one about reward and acknowledge listening behavior. Minimizing win and lose, or
I don't know.
I think the key issue here is the accepting environment, which is not win lose, and so highly competitive that people are so penalized for making mistakes and shamed for it that they don't want to play. The thing you're going to do if we're developing a brain trust is you want everybody to play. You want everybody to participate, and the more you facilitate that, the more people will perform for you. Now, some people do really well in highly competitive environments, but let's face it, most of us probably don't. And the shy folks are our canaries in the coal mines. I mean, they're the ones who say, you know what, this atmosphere is getting kind of toxic. But I think we all benefit from that kind of environment. The other thing is, I would suggest giving people leadership roles, giving the shy folks leadership roles, coaching them when they need it, but building on their strengths rather than trying to make them extroverts. Because what I found out the hard way in the clinic, they would come in and they would tell me, I can't do this, I don't have social skills, I need you to teach me social skills. Then I would watch them, and I'd set them up in a role play, somebody else's role play, so they weren't in the spotlight. I remember this one guy who was playing the role of somebody's boss. Oh, my God. He was compassionate. He was warm. He was assertive. We watched that whole role play, and my co-therapist and I were just sitting there with our jaws dropped, and we said to him, do you realize what kind of skills you've just demonstrated there? No. What? Who, me? What are you talking about? But no. He wasn't self-conscious in the moment. He wasn't thinking about himself. And so what I learned was I would sort of try to jump in and help and teach them, and then I realized that that was the wrong thing. What I would do then is I would say, well, what do you think? Well, how would you do it if you were the manager? Well, what if you set up this role play? How do you think we should do it? And the more I backed out, the more they took over.
You know, I want to take the other side, however. If you really look at the most effective CEOs in America, they are not that way. Yes, it's important to have that skill set when you need it, but most of them really are very testosterone-driven. They're very goal-oriented. They're less process-oriented. And yes, many times people are scared of them, but some fear is a motivator as well as positive reinforcement. And they are more no-nonsense. They are more aggressive. I mean, so, I dear listeners, I don't think that...
I don't know. Let's watch what's coming, because there are a whole bunch of shy leaders in history.
I know. We've gone there. But what I'm saying is, I think that lest we make the takeaway from this show, be nice and all will be well, I think we need to balance that against, the balance of testosterone and estrogen, if you will, at the risk of over-stereotyping, is an important one, whether it be in parenting or in leadership in the workplace.
Well,
and lest we all,
nice
I've seen too many people who are, workplaces that frankly tend to be very female-dominated, and they're really great on process, and they're very supportive, and they're very nurturing, and nothing ever gets done. Everything is collaborative, everybody feels good.
I don't think that's inevitable, because there's new research coming out of the business literature that are showing that egalitarian, lean, mean, collaborative teams are not only feeling better, but doing better.
Okay, good.
I hear what you're saying.
Fair enough. Again, you're listening to Work with Marty and Emco. I'm talking with Lynn Henderson. She directs the Shyness Clinic at Stanford University, one of America's leading experts on how to cope with being shy. Do you have an actual real-life success story of a human being you worked with that was quite shy, and it wasn't just a matter of embracing her inner shyness or his inner shyness? It was a matter of getting them to go from 3 standard deviations below the mean in terms of ability to interact with folks to being within the 1 standard deviation. You have a success story for us?
Well, I don't know if I've got anything that dramatic. I had one woman who was a PhD herself, who was working as an associate director at a medical research facility, and she was pretty submissive and nice, and it was costing her. And her boss was pretty hyper, very driven, but also tended, if anything went wrong, she tended to get the blame. And because she was shy, she'd kind of agree with that. And so with her, we had to do a lot of work on saying no when she needed to, being cordial, turning stuff back to him if they were actually his mistakes rather than hers. She had to, and actually having to sometimes say to the guy, you know, if you talk to me like this, it makes it harder for me to get my work done. Mm-hmm. It makes it harder for me to take in the constructive stuff you're really trying to tell me. Well, I mean, eventually what she did do was she was able to leave. She got a better job with a different group that was more collaborative. Now, is this a real success story in terms of did she become a hyper-dominant leader? No, but I don't think that ever would have been her temperament. Mm-hmm. So is that 3 standard deviations? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people come in who, you know, had never had a date in their lives and who were married a year and a half later. I mean, we've had that happen. But, I think mostly what we find is that people come in, and in the situations they really care about, if they work very consistently every day, they get better. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't want to be the alpha male. They're happy to be the assistant director.
I mean, implicit in what you're saying is, isn't it real, that most people in the end are not going to change radically, and it comes down to self-acceptance and getting the rest of the to be put themselves in environments where they're going to be accepted as is, or, and maybe educate somebody else on how to be more accommodating to them. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But if you look at Abraham Lincoln, he did some of the most radical things in the country. He didn't do it by blustering and storming.
Yep.
He did it by internal conviction. He did it by actually being quite, he had strong listening skills, and he tended not to badmouth people he was working with. As a matter of fact, his enemies, his political enemies, were in his cabinet.
Yep.
And he really encouraged them.
Well, that's standard, what's his name, Dale Carnegie. You know, basically you want to emphasize the positive as much as you can. And that was something I interviewed the leading biographer of Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And Warren Buffett is exactly that way. It was basically, you know, be positive where you possibly can, and
mm-hmm.
et cetera. Well, if somebody is a shy person and they'd like to read, you know, reading is something that shy people like to do because it doesn't require so much social interaction. What would be the one article that you would suggest a shy or a book, either one, an article or a book that you recommend a shy person read in order to try to become more effective in the world?
A book called From Good to Great by Jim Collins.
Yeah, it's a business book. It's a book on how large corporations get more successful, isn't it?
No kidding. And you know what? A lot of those leaders were very likely shy. They were described as diffident. They were described as shy.
Interesting.
So I think it's the question of developing your own leadership style and then sticking with it, focusing on the strengths, and then all of us have to get help, coaching, whatever else, for the stuff that we find harder.
Yeah.
But I think conflict isn't always head-to-head. Conflict can be determined. I mean, a lot of the research is based on baboon and chimp colonies.
Yeah.
You know, we've also got bonobos. We've got incidences of places in history where you don't win just because you're the biggest and the toughest.
Yeah, this bonobo example, that's a type of monkey that, in fact, where the shy ones are apparently the leaders, and is that
well,
right?
Well, actually, from what you said earlier, it's a female dominated, and there's not a whole lot of focus on competition, and there's a lot more focus on sharing.
What's if reading isn't enough? Is there another article though that's more explicitly about shy people and what to do that you would recommend a shy person read or no?
Oh yeah, there's a ton of them. I mean, Phil's book Shyness, Phil Zimbardo's book Shyness in the 70s is still really good. Huh. There's a great book called Reaching Out by David Johnson.
Okay.
It's about interpersonal skills, and it's based on research. It's updated frequently, and it's just a great one to have
for
general social skills. There's another one called The Highly Sensitive Person by Elaine Aron.
Right. She was a guest on my show.
Oh, that's terrific. So you know about that one. That's really helpful for shy people because I've had people come into the clinic and say, you know what? I don't think shyness is actually my problem. I think I am kind of sensitive, and I think I'm going to have to live with that.
Right.
But well, I don't necessarily think that I'm so worried about evaluation all the time.
And the last question, if reading isn't enough to help a shy person, and you keep talking about coaching, I like the word coaching because it feels less pathologizing than looking into the childhood roots of your...
Yeah,
you know, all this classic, object relations therapy where you're dealing with the childhood roots tends to be ineffective.
Yeah.
So what would you, if reading isn't enough to help a shy person, what would you recommend they do next?
Well, you can attend improvisational acting classes.
Huh,
that really helps. Public speaking classes or groups. Get coaching whenever you can. There is tons of business coaching around. And so that's often really helpful.
How about in Shine? I mean, you've got to stand, you had a number of people. There's Nicole Shiloff. There's a bunch of different people who work in shyness work specifically. Would you recommend before somebody does that they go, take a Toastmasters class or an improv class? Or would you recommend, at what point, if any, would you recommend they see some shyness, therapist type person?
I think at the point when they're finding that they can't make themselves do the homework.
Okay.
Because you got to do something every day, and you sort of got to graduate the work, so it's more and more and more challenging.
Yeah.
You get great guidance from books like this. But I think if you can't do that and you're really lonely and you're hard on yourself and you're getting depressed, get help.
Now, when you ran the Stanford Clinic, a lot of the people. I know I'm putting you on the spot. But if there was one person you would recommend that people call for that kind of work, who would it be that you know? Or you could say, I just don't know anymore because you've been out of there for a while. What's your recommendation?
Well, if I would still recommend that the Shyness Clinic is now at Palo Alto University in Palo Alto. The clinic itself is in Los Altos.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend that people call the clinic.
Okay.
I mean, the director's name is Nicole Shiloff. She's very good. We're still doing, they're still using the social fitness model with the 6-month groups. And the groups are actually a lot of fun. But if you can't get to Palo Alto or that kind of thing, they can also help with referrals. Another really good place is in Oakland. It's called the Center for Cognitive Therapy.
That's
another really good place.
Great. Well,
and Marty, can I tell you one other book?
Yes,
just
please
for the fun of it?
Absolutely.
This is called Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness.
Exactly.
By Christopher Lane.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. It really is. In some sense, you got to accept. If my parents had put me on Ritalin because I was hyperactive, I think I would have been a much less interesting and actually less self-efficacious person.
Mm-hmm.
I think self-acceptance and finding the places in the world that, where being type, whatever you are, fits. Like me being a talk show host does fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I do. And just, some self-acceptance and finding your place in the world and the romantic partner who will accept you for who you are.
Exactly.
That ultimately ends up being pretty critical to the whole thing.
Yeah. Lot of the new mindfulness-based stress reduction classes, mm-hmm. they're helpful for everybody, but they're also helpful for people who are struggling with shyness.
I think that's true, too. Lynn Henderson, thank you very much for being my guest. Is there anything you want to plug of your own?
Oh, well, now that you ask,
why not?
I am coming out with a book.
Uh-huh.
It will be published in England probably in July.
Okay.
Called A Compassionate Approach to Shyness.
Wonderful.
And it's based on Buddhist theory as well as cognitive
uh-huh.
behavioral work.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about how using Buddhist imagery and that sort of thing can also really help.
Well, wonderful. Let us both be in the moment for here and moving forward and have beginner's minds, as they say.
Right.
Okay. Lynn Henderson, thanks very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you, Marty.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Well, I like that. I hope you did too. You know, I was thinking today's Valentine's Day, first of all. Of course, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. But I was thinking, I guess I'll tell the little context. Tonight, I host a radio show on KGO as well as here. And tonight I'm bringing my piano, a little keyboard, to KGO. And every so often when I do three-minute career makeovers there, too. And in between, I'm going to play little romantic songs. And so there was one romantic song I really wanted to play, but it really isn't quite romantic. It's Bring Him Home, song from Les Miserables, in which I guess the son of a couple goes off to war, and they sing this beautiful song wanting him to come home. And it's a kind of love song, but it's not really romantic. But I said, I got to figure out how can I justify playing this beautiful song on that show. And I realized how many men, and I emphasize men, are in Iraq and Afghanistan dying. Do you know that 99%, according to the Department of Defense, 99% of workplace deaths, not workplace deaths, excuse me, of deaths in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan occurred to men. The media is so interested in being, quote, fair to women, that you always see, I was opening this week's Time magazine, and you have a picture of a woman pilot. Well, yes, if you read the fine print, the woman pilot was flying the soldiers into Iraq, and then they were there, because women are not allowed to serve in direct combat. Women are not required to register for the draft. And in fact, 99% of workplace deaths, soldier deaths, occur to men. And in fact, 92% of all workplace deaths occur to men. And so on this Valentine's Day, because I don't have the piano here, so I'm not going to play that, but shouldn't we be giving a very special Valentine's Day wish to all the women who are home? Or there are men, you know, gay men who are, you know, partners, whose partners are in Iraq or Afghanistan. Their love is, in, as they say, the cliche, in harm's way. You know, I consider Valentine's Day a hyper-commercial, you know, corporate-created holiday in some senses. But if there is a legitimate role of Valentine's Day, it is for the love that is far away and perhaps in harm's way. So that's my workplace Valentine's Day card to all the men and, yes, women who are in harm's way. A special Valentine's Day hug to them, literally and metaphorically. Now I'd like to give out the phone number for you. I'm going to spend the rest of this show focusing on you and your career misery. Not that I thrive on your misery, but I can't solve a problem unless there's a problem there, and I want to help you make your life better. So if you've got a work problem, either because you are young and don't know how to get started, can't get an internship that leads to anywhere, you're middle age and you feel your career is stalled or you never really started one, or you're older and feeling tired or feeling like they think your employer thinks you're a deadwood, or you're self-employed and the recession continues to recede and not recovering, or if you're a victim of this, quote, jobless recovery, the phone number for what I call a three-minute career makeover, I really can usually help you take a baby step forward. The phone number, or maybe even a giant step forward, the phone number here on Work with Marty Nemco for a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go right to the phones. We've got callers. And so, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. How can I help you? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, this sounds.
I'm not calling for a career makeover.
Wait, this sounds like one wife. Let me introduce. This is Dr. Barbara Nemco. Are you late? You were going to be coming. Are you? You've never called into the show anymore. So I'm assuming it's you're calling to tell me you're going to be late. Is that it?
No, I'm calling because you asked for a recommendation for a book for people who are shy.
Yeah, go ahead.
And as someone who is shy.
Yeah.
Who absolutely dread walking into situations where there are mostly people I don't know. I don't know what to say, and there's a certain panic that sets in because it's an anxiety-provoking situation. And then when the anxiety sets in, my brain shuts down, so I really don't know what to say.
Right.
What I recommend that has helped me enormously is, number one, to plan in advance. knowing you're going into that situation, make a plan for things you're going to talk about. And the best book I ever read that helped so much was Julie Morgenstern's How to Work a Room.
It's not Julie Morgenstern's. How to Work a Room is by Susan Rowane. But yes.
You're right. Susan Rowane, that's correct. I forgot.
That's all right, but that's great. That's right. How to Work a Room is a very good book for that exact purpose. You couldn't be more right.
And it's helped me more times than I can tell you. So that's all. That's my tip. See you in a little while.
Very good. I appreciate it. You know, isn't it amazing? Thanks for calling, Barb. Isn't it amazing? Now, anybody who would hear Barbara Nemco on the radio or meet her in person could not see somebody who is more confident and able to say the right things. And yet, I know my wife. I've been with her for a million years. She's at her nature. She's shy. She's not an ebullient person by nature. So, see, you know, beneath, as Lynn Henderson said, beneath the surface, a large percentage of folks are shy. She said at the beginning of the interview, 60% of college students self-identify as shy. Only about 1 or 2% say they've never experienced shyness. Anyway, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. Hello.
Hi, I'm Sally.
Hiya, Sally.
Hi. I've got a lot of work problems right now. I've been running, I was running my own business. I've been an entrepreneur for about 10 years, and I've had very poor, almost no business over the last 4 or 5 years. And so I've decided to look for work again. And very often, I'm either coming across as overconfident or a little bit cocky, or I'm having difficulty, you know, because things are so bad, I'm having to apply even at Starbucks, and I'm having difficulty, you know, with a straight face telling Starbucks why I want to work there or whatever. But things are quite bad. In about 6-8 weeks, I won't even be able to continue to stay in my apartment. So I guess I would like some advice as to, you know, how I can smooth over and talk with people without having to, you know, I have been an entrepreneur. I haven't been in a subservient position, and now I'm having difficulty with those interviews and in making myself look just like a middle-range, nice little candidate.
Well, let's figure out, the first step will be to try to figure out something specific rather than flailing around trying to get any job, even Starbucks or whatever. Let's create a goal for you that you will feel like, you won't feel like a toad. Excuse me. Where you won't feel like a toady. You say you have a tendency to come across as cocky, so I'm going to ask you to let me take control of this right now because I think I can be of help. So tell me, take the next 30 seconds or so to tell me some clues about who you are. What are the things you are good at? What are the things people have complimented you about? What do you care about? Tell me a little bit about you.
Well, I'm deeply intuitive. I'm very good at connecting people with resources.
Mm-hmm.
Even no matter what shape I'm in, if somebody says they need something, I normally can come up with 3 or 4 resources or books or whatever. I've worked as a concierge for the last 10 years. I'm a master of connections.
Okay.
I'm a good listener. I can get to the bottom of things quickly. Years ago, I was a career counselor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm decent at planning events if I'm left alone. I think it's very thankless in terms of working with a client, but I love working with vendors. I love negotiating prices and figuring out what people are going to do and putting the parts together. So those are some of the things I'm good at. And so, you know, there's about 20, 30 different areas I could look for work in.
So let's say I said you were going to be a buyer. In what field, you know, the fields that tend to be growing right now, is government. And so if I said, we're going to play a game, we're going to pull out the Sally meter. And the Sally meter goes from 0 to 10, with 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you ecstasy. So the idea of being a purchasing agent, either for the government or for a company that it gets government contracts, what would that score?
It would be very low, like a 1.
Okay. And why? Because here you are, you're saying you like connecting people, you like buying. Why would that be a 1?
Because I really like things that involve a lot of creativity and where I can affect the outcome, not straight bureaucratic, purchase 10 of these or 5 of those. I like creative negotiation. I like finding interesting resources. So I wouldn't be good like purchasing pharmaceuticals or government forms for the 1040, you know. It needs to really connect with, like, why I liked it as a concierge is I was purchasing entertainment, I was purchasing balloons, I was purchasing those kinds of things.
So if, and so since you like doing the kind of more the simple, pleasant kind of connecting of people, what made you leave the world of concierge services?
I lost the last contract I had. I had a series of corporate contracts, and for a whole series of reasons, I lost the last one. I tried to get work at Google and IBM and Cisco, and those were the kinds of clients I had. And I wasn't able to close deals after I lost the deals in 2004. So I've come very close, but it's very hard to close these large deals. And I've been ultimately unsuccessful after the last contract ended.
And if you had a choice between each of these two things, which would you choose? Would you choose being a manager in a small company or nonprofit, or would you rather become a librarian?
A librarian.
And what would that score on the Sally meter?
Well, not the librarian per se, but I like working independently. You tell me what you want, I'll go get it for you. I don't manage people.
So if I said that you were going to be...
And I like research and I like books.
Right. So what if I said there was the choice was going to become, you were going to become an independent researcher specializing in authors who are needing a researcher to do the research for their...
I would love that.
Okay.
If Barbara Eckenhart needed a researcher tomorrow, I would die and go to heaven.
You mean Barbara Ehrenreich?
Ehrenreich, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. So what if I said you were to make a list of the 20 writers? Well, clearly Barbara Ehrenreich is, you know, a typical, you know, she's a lefty how-to writer. What if you were to make a list of the 20 lefty how-to writers that you most like and write them a beautiful letter which explains compellingly how good a researcher you are and why you specifically love her writing so much, and see if you can get a project that way as a way of breaking into this new field. And once you've got one of these people willing to hire you on a project basis, then you've got that on your resume and you can get more. Does that make sense?
I would love that.
There you go.
I would really love that.
That's my 3-minute career makeover for you today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
Yes, first of all, Marty, as a veteran myself, I would like to offer you my most sincere thanks for your Valentines to our men and women in Afghanistan and Iraq. Thank you very much.
Are you willing to also say, you said men and women, but I really focused on the men because 99% of the deaths that occurred to men. You still embrace the validity of your, you embrace my Valentine's Day card when it's mainly to the women whose men are at greatest risk in Iraq and Afghanistan?
That too.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much for saying that. It's much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you again.
Oh, that was it? Oh, God. I'm always expecting to have to work. You know, they usually give the nice compliment, and then they put me to work. I got to come up with something. But this guy just called to thank me. What a hell of a nice guy. I appreciate that. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. How can I help you?
Hello?
Hello.
First time, long time. So I was having a pretty successful young career in healthcare, biotech. And just because I was just feeling a little bit restless and antsy, I wanted to make a career change.
What were you doing in healthcare? There's a lot of jobs in healthcare and biotech, from regulatory affairs to being a lab tech. What were you doing?
Regulatory affairs.
Okay.
And I wanted to make a career change. For really no good reason, if looking back on it, but into renewable energy and that kind of thing. So I started taking some engineering classes, and I.
Are you there?
Hello.
I think we lost him. I've been told to wait. Are you there? Well, I guess not. I guess anyway. Yeah, let's go to the next call. Yeah, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Feel free, by the way, the other person who was calling, feel free to call back. Anyway, the guy who was swept away in the environmental frenzy, by the way, before we go to this call, I mean, I was just reading in the London Times today Apparently now they're some really, really, really mainstream scientists are beginning to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this global warming thing isn't real. Our measurement techniques aren't that accurate, and to the extent they're accurate, global temperatures have not gone up now since 1995. Is this whole global warming thing beginning to unravel? I don't know. But anyway, the previous caller, feel free to call back. In the meantime, I welcome you to work with Marty Nemco. How can I help you?
Hey, Marty. Is that me?
Hi, it is you.
Hi. First of all, I just want to thank you. I wasn't planning on tuning today because I just didn't want to think about work.
Right.
It was such a great subject. I think that most people would call me extroverted, but I think that I'm actually kind of shy in certain situations. Mm-hmm. And I probably am too sensitive. And I work with somebody who is really extroverted and outgoing and doesn't seem to have a shy bone in their body. And they get a lot of, they're very confident, and they get a lot of kudos for that. They seem to advance more quickly than I do.
Sure, because is it correct that person gets a lot done because they're not shy, they're able to just, get it done? They're maybe not the most sensitive person in the world, but they get the work done. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay.
That's very fair. Okay. And I'm just wondering what the advice is, because I think that I'm a really good worker, and I'm pretty confident, and I'm a little aggressive in certain situations, but I just find when I compare myself to this that I kind of fall apart.
Well, it's like Lynn said, there are many ways to excellence. And I think if I took all the listeners to this show and I asked them to raise your hand if you like and respect more reflective, quieter people or big, aggressive types, you may be more intimidated by the aggressive type, but most people like quiet, shy types. And there are plenty of quiet, shy leader types. So is it a matter of what Lynn Henderson said, embracing your work style and putting yourself in situations where you can exert your leadership or your excellence well without comparing yourself to this dude?
I think it would be better. It's funny that you called them a dude. I didn't actually say their sex. But
Well, you normally think about the really aggressive, hard-driving, competitive types. Men are more like that. Is it a man or a woman?
Yeah, it's a man.
Right, okay. So...
Yeah, I think that it would be behoove me to just accept what I am, but I can't seem to help to compare myself. And they also seem to, that kind of behavior seems to advance more quickly.
And then maybe they can, I have played more basketball than any human being on the planet, 7 days a week for about 35 years. I'm still a guy who can't jump. My moves stink. I'm just not a great basketball player, and I accept my level. I am a good street yard basketball player. That's it. I am a very good pianist, but I'm still not a world-class pianist. We all have our levels. I'm a good radio talk show host, but I'm not nationally syndicated. At some point, we also accept, I'm ugly. I am not a handsome guy. I have to accept that. Is it a matter at some point we accept who we are, and that makes you able to live life a lot better than always? Because if I compared myself to the greatest talk show hosts and the greatest basketball players and, the greatest musicians, I'd be miserable. Is it time to stop with the stupid competition and comparing?
This is a good point. Yes, it's time to stop.
That's it. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. Hello.
Hi, I was just calling, and my call got dropped. I was the one that was in regulatory. Yeah, and so that's what I was doing. I made the switch to renewable energy engineering by taking some classes, and I was able to land an entry-level job in that field. But I was laid off recently, and now I'm trying to just send my resumes out. I'm both searching for my old career and the new career. But as you said on your show, renewable energy engineering, that's very competitive right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's a lot of people looking for entry-level people.
No, we're not. Here, where I think the space is that, I think we're going to soon realize, especially with now, the science around global warming is slowly unraveling. It really is. They were going to be slowly backing out because of the egg on our face. And especially the fastest, I think, areas in which we're going to back out are solar, because the physics is so limiting of how much the energy solution is going to be in solar, and same with wind. But what is not going to go away is smart grid. Not only has the Obama administration committed a hell of a lot of money to smart grid, but there are lots of opportunities for For engineers, whether it be in the monitoring of the grid so that there is, you know, distributed use of power at the right time to the right places, and then individual meters, there's a certain amount where individual meters are going to do that. There is a whole lot of engineering work that is going to be needed in smart grid. I would be tending to, you know, if take my existing knowledge, but read up a lot on what really is component. There's something called Pike. I don't remember what the Pike Consulting business, where they did a major report on the directions of smart grid. And I would be going reading that to get myself up to speed really quickly on the new directions in smart grid and try to parlay my knowledge, your current engineering knowledge into that space. Because if you really, you know, cared that enough to, you know, to go and leave the biotech industry, which is a pretty hot industry, to go to the green thing, and you're listening to KALW, chances are you care a lot about the environmental stuff. So before you go back to Reg Affairs or whatever, which is going to be there because, as I've said on the show before, it requires, like, every new drug requires 3 truckloads of regulatory affairs information goes to the FDA and other agencies. So before you go back to that pit, you know, why not look at smart grid? It's going to be cutting edge. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But like I said, I think breaking in at entry level is hard right now with this economy. And so,
yeah, but the economy is not getting better. So I'm saying is, you know,
right,
before you flail and give up too quickly, you're in the right church, you're in the wrong pew. You know, I think in the renewable energy thing, you know, the solar and the wind and the hydro and the wave power and all this stuff, that's going to be seen as a little boondoggle that was just a temporary, just like nobody talks anymore about ethanol. You know, that was the big thing 2 or 3 years ago, and that went away. And, you know, this is all going to, this to me, you know, I'm only one guy. I am one observer of the landscape. In my judgment, I could be wrong, but in my judgment, that's a passing fancy.
Well, that's not my question, actually. My question is, so I think I have a pretty good resume in my old career, and so I've been trying to find work and, you know, just sending out resumes like crazy. But for some reason, I'm getting the feeling that maybe because I stepped out of that career, that people think I'm not really dedicated to that
that's
career
right.
path.
And that's
and
why
I haven't really...
That's why I ignored you. That's why I got where you were going. You wanted to go back to getting into biotech. And I'm saying you're, you know, given in a 2-minute phone call, using my, you know, putting my little intuitive and, you know, tea leaf reading hat on, my sense is you're going to have a better chance of getting a job trying to use your environmental skills to go into smart grid because that's where the growth is and that's where your most recent employment is than trying to make the case that, oh, no, I really didn't lose my interest in regulatory affairs. Regulatory affairs is the meaning of life to me. I love it. So I'm just telling you that my gut says if you want to get higher, you have a better chance of going the smart grid route. Make sense?
All right. Thanks.
All right. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Eric Jansen, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers, and my wife, Barbara Nemco, and I are going to talk about looking toward retirement, how to make the most of your last years at work, how to plan for a great retirement, both pre-retirement stuff and your relationship with your significant other when you got to face them 24/7. And in the process, we're going to discuss a book called How to Retire. I hate the title, but How to Retire Happy, Wild, and Free, Retirement Wisdom You Won't Get from Your Financial Advisor. Till next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
More than 500 of Marty Nemco's published articles and chapters from his book, Cool Careers for Dummies, are free on his website. From there, you can also email him if you'd like coaching on your career or want to comment on this program. His site is martynemco.com. That's martynemko.com. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 FM KALW San Francisco.